Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to agoristradio.com.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. Agoristradio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunk. This is Hero White, and today our special guest is Nefario. Nefario comes to us from the GLBSE, the Global Bitcoin Stock Exchange, provided by Bitcoin Global. Capital and trading for all. The Global Bitcoin Stock Exchange allows Bitcoin investors, traders, and entrepreneurs to create the most efficient allocation of resources, and it allows people to do a lot of things here. We'll get into that in a little bit more after we talk with Nefario here. Nefario, are you there?
Hi, Hero. How are you?
Very good. Thank you very much for coming on. I just heard about your project within the past 24 hours and fired off an email to you with PGP, and you responded with PGP, and this is really nice. Thanks for coming on.
No, it's a pleasure to be on.
Why don't you, I do this with a lot of shows, but why don't you tell us, where did you come from in jumping into this Bitcoin stuff and offering this stock exchange? I mean, we'll talk a little bit more about what the service provides right now and what you're looking at doing with it and where it's going. But I'm interested in what your motivations were for jumping into coding this system.
Well, over the last few years, I've been kind of investigating not just cyberpunk and cyberpunk. I suppose I've always been a cyberpunk, but looking at kind of financial cryptography and trying to find out what systems are out there. And about a little bit less than 6 months ago, I came across Bitcoin. And at the time, not a huge, it didn't have the following it has now. Mm-hmm. But I looked at it and I thought, yeah, this can work. I had a look at the technical aspect of it, not so much the code, but the way, the logic of how the system works. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, that works. That works pretty well. And I kind of have an Austrian school economic, not background, but interest.
Right.
And so the idea of it being a limited currency really appealed to me. So I started kind of mining, and two-week period, I'd mined about 1,000 bitcoins. And this was at a time when 1,000 bitcoins were worth like $1 or $2. And I thought this was really cool, and my spouse was like really annoyed that I was leaving the computer on all the time, and sounded like a vacuum cleaner in the corner. So I played around with it for about a month and then kind of forgot about it for a little while, because not, you know, everything, the whole idea works, and economically it works, but there wasn't enough people using it, and I was kind of busy, so I had to go off and do some other things, and then came back about early November, and I noticed that, wow, these are, the exchange rate has gone up to like 40 cents, 30, 40 cents per Bitcoin.
Right.
And there's, you know, the following has grown quite a bit. And I thought, you know, this is taking off. This is, people are getting behind this and it's going to work. Mm-hmm. So I started talking with other people about kind of what it could mean. There was a lot of, you know, well, maybe you don't, but there's a lot of threads on the Bitcoin website around the kind of theoretical businesses and needs of the Bitcoin economy and so on. So for a few weeks, kind of talked about that and then started looking at trying to implement it. And somebody mentioned open transactions from Fellow Traveler. And I went and investigated that, and some others had investigated. We found at the time it was, I'd managed to get it working, but it's kind of difficult to use. And I thought right now, or at that time, it wasn't ready. But I thought some of the ideas from this were top-notch ideas, like the self-verifying contracts, the fact that, you know, whether it's shares or bonds or whatever, it's all just a contract, the Ricardian contract, and then triple entry accounting and so on. So I think that all that works. It's just open transactions just isn't ready for it. And I think in the future, I don't know whether it'd be a 6 month time period or a year or whatever. I think a lot of, we're going to see a lot more of this stuff popping up. And I think open transactions will be behind it. But it's not ready now. And we need a stock exchange for Bitcoin now.
Okay.
You know, people on the forums, people are talking about, oh, I'm going to, you know, I'm doing a bond, you know, anybody want to bid for my bond? And as well, I think it was in January or February, somebody set up a kind of mining co-op.
Yeah.
So basically you could say it was like the first Bitcoin company.
You're right. Yeah.
So, the first Bitcoin company. And I tried to get in on that. But the only thing I had to offer was Bitcoin, as opposed to what they didn't just need Bitcoin. They needed someone who could host the mining machines and that kind of thing. So I wasn't included in that. Bit disappointed, but no big deal. And I thought that, you know, right now there's a lot of projects that want to get started, and there's a lot of, you know, Bitcoin, it's currency, so it's capital, and we need a way to kind of organize this capital and let people organize it and get behind and you know, get funding for their own projects. So I decided that I'm going to, well, actually, no, that the stock market is actually secondary to our original goal. The original goal was to create a kind of reputation system because a number of us had been scammed by a particular user. I don't limit scams, something like 50 Bitcoins.
Something and they didn't follow through on it.
Yeah, or they'd start kind of begging for Bitcoins, and you know, some of us had, some of us could kind of like lend them Bitcoins, and of course we'd never get them back.
Oh, okay.
So I'd only lost about 50 Bitcoins, but someone else had lost thousands of Bitcoins, which was worth at the time worth about $300. So we were very unhappy about this because this was the second or third time this person had done this. He'd gone off and created a second or third identity and come back as a new person. So, and you know yourself that this is a problem with kind of doing business online, that you can go off and become anonymous and so on.
Right.
So we came up with an idea which is kind of similar to, I just finished listening to your Black and Yellow Pages podcast, so it's kind of similar to that in that it's like a network of people who know each other and so on. But we were kind of getting organized to start doing this and putting in our capital. So we raised around 3,500 Bitcoins, which was worth about $2,500 at the time. I put in some of my own Bitcoin. And the idea was to build this thing, and then we decided, you know what, we kind of need something to manage this. Like, we need to manage share distribution for our company.
Yeah,
and votes as well. And then when we start making money, we need to pay owners of these shares dividends.
Yeah.
So we thought, okay, we'll put the reputation system aside for the moment and do a stock market. That should be nice and simple. Hasn't turned out as simple as I'd like.
Yeah, I can.
I was actually hoping to have the thing launched Sunday just gone, but we just launched our second phase of testing as opposed to the actual stock market itself. So, yeah, we decided, okay, to kind of help us organize it ourselves, we're going to go ahead and do this. And I originally stole the idea from Open Transactions, a lot of the things. And then as I've been iterating and going through, I've been shaving things off. So we no longer do the internal kind of triple accounting. We have a more traditional accounting system. Uh-huh. So for accounts, we do that. Yeah, I've kind of lost my thread of thought.
Well, you were saying that you were going to do the reputation system, but then you decided to go ahead and use this money right now to do the stock exchange.
Well, we did talk to all the investors and ask them if it was okay if we went and did the stock exchange first, then the reputation system. And we have a couple of other ideas that we're going to go after as well. We're just kind of limited in resources.
Okay.
So that's how the whole thing started. I'd gotten on to Fellow Traveler on the forums, on the Bitcoin forums, and kind of criticized them a bit because it's not that I'm a Ruby programmer.
Okay.
So, and I found it a little difficult integrating into Ruby, so I decided I'm just not going to use Open Transaction for the moment. I'd rather not spend my time trying to figure out how to get it to work with Ruby, so I went and kind of rewrote my own. And as I was going through the iterations, I shaved off got rid of certain elements of functionality that were not so much necessary to run a stock market. You know, with Open Transactions, you focus a lot on anonymity and all that, which is very important.
Right.
Which is why in the future, when Open Transactions is ready, I'd like to migrate the back end of the stock exchange to that.
Okay.
But for the moment, we just need a stock exchange.
Yeah.
To get started first.
Yeah, yeah.
So we decided to take the self-verifying contracts, take the whole kind of idea that it is a contract as opposed to any particular type of asset. So it's just contracts in the same way as Open Transactions. It's XML files that are signed by the issuer. The whole system is based on public-private keys. So when you register an account, first you need to install the client, which is just a command line tool. When you register an account, it creates a public-private key pair. The public key is sent to the server. You get an identity. Your ID is actually SHA-256 hash of your public key. And so the server then has your public key and your ID, and then any orders that go in. So if you want to create a new asset, you want to buy an asset, sell an asset, or issue an asset, or anything like that, the client will use your private key to sign your order, send in your order to the server as a HTTP post request. The server will take the signature, verify it with the public key that it has. If it's okay, then it'll go ahead and process it. If it's not okay, it'll spit back an error. And I call this whole system VOP, Verified Order Protocol.
Okay.
Once we implemented it, the client's in Python and the server's in Ruby. Once we implemented it, it seems easy enough to use. It's nice and clean, and we don't have a lot of the security problems that normal web applications have.
Right. Well, let's back up a little bit because you're covering a lot of ground that I have many questions and we're going pretty quickly.
Okay.
Here.
Okay.
So a lot of listeners don't really know some of the things that the system does. So I'm going to go back to this on your front page. It says it allows people to issue shares to raise capital, pay dividends to shareholders, put resolutions to shareholders and get their vote, issue and sell bonds, borrow and lend to the market, make and receive loan repayments, issue futures contracts, metatrade on non-listed companies or other exchanges.
Wow.
And trade all of the above with other traders on the market. Now, I see you say here, if you're using Windows, you can get started by going here, and it gives a tutorial. I'm on Linux, and I downloaded the client, and I had to install a couple of, I had to apt-get a couple of Python libraries, but there was like two of them.
But after that, it was pretty much the same.
No, yeah, it was just Python and Black Market Pi, and it ran. So,
yeah. You didn't. I don't even think you need to add the Python command. You just run Black Market Pi, and it works.
Great. So, tell me, out of all of these things that are listed that I just went off here, are all of these working right now?
No.
Okay.
The thing that is not working. What is not? I'll tell you what's not working first, because that's the shorter list. Right now, dividends are not working. And voting, the whole voting and motion system is not working. That's what I'm currently programming into the system at the moment.
Okay.
So you can't make resolutions and then vote on them yet, and you can't pay dividends yet. But right now, you can create an account. You can create assets. So asset being stock, bond, loans, whatever. You can issue them. So after you've created the asset, that kind of just puts it in the system. And you can issue them, so you can, I don't know, like, you know, put 1,000 of this type of asset into your account. You can transfer the assets. So if you have the account number of someone else, you can send it to them. You can put these assets for sale on the market. You can buy these assets if these assets are for sale on the market. By the way, the whole thing is priced in Bitcoin. So if you want to buy anything, you need to deposit Bitcoin to your account. This is working. If you want to sell anything, you know, you will receive Bitcoin in return, which you can then withdraw. The minimum amount you can withdraw from the system is whatever the Bitcoin network can handle.
Right.
Which I think is like 0.01 Bitcoin at the moment.
Okay. Well, let's go over a couple of these. And this is Cypherpunk, so, you know, we do get a little technical here. You know, we're not going to discuss, you know, crypto at a very low level, but... Well, I want to go over this. You have it appears you have the client is open source and is hosted on Gatorius.org, /market. Now, real quick, as a developer, any reason why you or anything you like about Gatorius over GitHub?
Actually, I've been collaborating with. I wasn't the initial developer on the client. I've only made a few changes on the client. The initial developer was a person called Genjix, G-E-N-J-I-X, from the Bitcoin forums. And actually, I suppose you could say he was our first employee. We were paying him in Bitcoin to develop this command line client. And he recommended Gatorius for various reasons, and I went with it.
Okay. Just curious. Now, it appears that this is that you just have on here the client. So your actual system that you're doing, that's all your private business code, but you're open sourcing the client that runs on the user's computers.
Exactly. Yeah. Because the client is the thing that has the private key and deals with the private key, that needs to be made public. So people who want to investigate that need to be able to ensure that it's not sending the private key or doing anything it shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Because that private key is their identity.
Anything else from the machine. You want to know what's going on. That's great.
Mm. And with regards to the server, we will be releasing the server as open source in the future.
Really?
Probably in about 6 months, five to 6 months time. Yeah. I'd be a bit ashamed at the moment to release it now. I'm not too confident in how my code looks. I think it looks awful. And I don't know, maybe I'm a good coder. I don't know. I'd like to keep it private until I'm happy with it.
Yeah.
And what we're going to do when we release when we open the market, we'll put up a bounty. So for a certain price, if you want the server code released right now, you know, you can pay, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 bitcoins. And then the closer we get to our release date, the lower that price will get. The idea is just to help us cover our initial capital cost if someone wants to go ahead and get this server code.
Yeah.
And also, if someone doesn't want to, it gives us a kind of head start being the first to market.
But we're
happy having the server code made available for free. I think that's important it can be investigated.
Yeah, that's really fantastic, and it's understandable for you to even hold on to it for a little bit, like you said, to have a little head start, because I think that this is going to, with what I see you guys doing here and the quality of what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing from you, this is this can really, really take off. Well, let's go through this tutorial page here. I just want to go over some of the functions here. It's real basic. The blackmarket.py file, you just have some arguments that you get here, like black market. And when I instead of doing blackmarket.py, I'm just going to say, you know, black market and then the command. So you have black market register that gives you asks you for a password and a password confirmation. Now, when I did that, it didn't look like a password prompt. It looked like a passphrase prompt. It gave those little dots flying across, like when you generate a PGP key. So I guess this is generating.
Well, it is actually generating a key,
yeah.
And then it's looking for a password to encrypt that key on your system.
Right. There you go. Okay. And if you can type black market user, and it actually will pull up your user ID. I guess
user ID. What it does is it just gives you back the SHA-256 hash of your public key.
Right. Okay. And let's see. Depositing, withdrawing, and checking your balance. This is nice. Let's see. Black market deposit. I ran that. It was great because it just spit out make a payment, to this Bitcoin address. Now, we did a Bitcoin. The Bitcoin API show last week with Mids, and one of the things we were talking about was Mids was saying that it's good practice in these systems, of course your system too, because you're depositing specifically to an account, you're generating a new payment ID and storing that in the system with the user's ID as their location for paying, correct?
Yeah, so for when you run Bitcoin or black market deposit, it will generate a new payment address. So every payment has its own payment address.
Okay.
And then what that'll do is it'll stick a kind of entry in the database saying, okay, this address, we're waiting for a payment to this address. And right. Then it'll check that address periodically.
Okay. And that's per transaction. You get a payment.
Per transaction, yeah.
Okay, that's great. Then black market balance, of course, returns your Bitcoin balance. And this. The withdrawal is black market withdrawal, the amount, and then the location that you want the bitcoins to be paid to. So you're not paying.
Yeah. Again, another Bitcoin address.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's excellent for many reasons. Your assets transfer. They see black market folio print out a asset ID ticket symbol that you hold information. Let's see, the depth test acid, black market, transfer, this, what is this transfer for exactly?
Well, if you issue assets, so let's say you've already created your own Bitcoin company, uh-huh. Taking, for example, the mining company that started up before me, they've already got their own shareholders, and they've manually kind of signed share certificates with PGP or GPG and sent them out to the shareholders and whatever. So if they wanted to move on to the stock market, they can then, issue like 1,000 shares and then distribute them to the shareholders after the fact that they've already done it originally. So it allows people who have already got shareholders to kind of migrate to the market. And if you want to just give shares or give an asset, so issue assets and then give them to someone else without charging them, then you can go ahead and do that too.
Okay, but is the transfer only for the issuer, or can anyone who has an asset give an asset to someone else direct with this command?
It is anyone who has an asset.
Okay, great. Let's see, making an order here, buying, black market, buy. I very funny, you have e-gold here as your example currency. So you have black market, buy, the amount, e-gold.
So black market, buy, the quantity you want to buy, mm-hmm. Then the ID or the ticker of the asset you want to buy, and then the price
right.
You want to pay.
Excellent. and then selling, and then that throws an order in the order book, or it does an automatic execution of the order if there's a match. Correct.
If there's a matching order, it'll automatically execute that order and then give you back the ID of your transaction.
Okay.
And it also handles partial orders. So if your order or another order is only partially fulfilled, that's not a problem. It'll leave the remaining order there and give you back your transaction.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, selling the same thing, black market, quantity, asset name, and then the price. And then your order book here, for your personal order book, black market orders, and that shows your order status, active status is working, market waiting for counter order. I'll just read this because it's interesting. Pay close attention to the order status. An order with an active status is working on the market waiting for a counter order. However, if you have placed an order and not have enough funds or assets to cover it, it will be marked so in the order status, not assets, not bitcoins. Orders that are not active should be removed. You can use the cancel command for this, and that is black market, cancel, and then the order number.
Yeah. The reason I did that was I was unsure what to do about people who place orders and who don't have enough funds in their account, but maybe they might at a future date have enough funds when the order is actually processed. Uh-huh. So what I decided to do was the orders will be allowed to go onto the market. And then when the order is processed, it'll check your account to see if you have enough assets or if you have enough Bitcoin. If you do, it'll process the order and there won't be any problem. If you don't, then it'll mark this order saying not enough Bitcoins or not enough assets and take it off the market. And then you kind of need to just go and remove that order yourself. And the reason it shows up in your order book is so it doesn't look like the order just disappeared to you.
Right, but it only shows up in your order book. It doesn't go into the... into the house.
No, it doesn't go into anyone else's, no.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Okay, then you have your account history here. Black market, Bitcoin history, black market.
So there's Bitcoin history, asset history, and market history. So Bitcoin history should show you all your deposits, withdrawals, and any buys or sells that you've done. So it'll show you five Bitcoin was taken out and it was a buy. So you bought something, or five Bitcoin was put into your account and that was a sell because you sold something. And then with asset history, it'll show you... Actually, I need to investigate the asset history one. There might be, just on the labeling there might be a bit of a problem. But anyway, asset history will show you if an asset has been transferred, bought or sold, or issued. It'll show you if the asset has been issued. Okay. So that would only happen if you were the owner of this asset. And then market history just shows you all your buys and all your sells. So all your previous successful market transactions.
Great. Now, and the return on these, are they being spit out in any type of machine parsable format?
From the server, so anybody can go ahead and write a client for this. The client just needs to suit the verified order protocol. I need to write that up to make it easier for people to kind of make their own client. But what's returned from the server is JSON, and what's sent to the server is JSON in post HTTP post requests.
Okay.
So it's all JSON.
Okay. So someone could even modify this black market Pi script and
throw
something in there, that a little optional arg at the end that would trigger just a raw JSON return.
Once we have a stable client, once all the command line client functionality is done, I would encourage people to go ahead and do that, to add all the bells and whistles that they would like in a command line client.
Okay, great. Yeah, we'll talk about what you're doing for the client and the server, what kind of code and libraries you're using in a moment. The next section here, creating new assets and getting a stock ticker. Okay, this is pretty fascinating. Sample certificates, you have bonds, shares, futures, contract. To create a new asset, first you need a contract or a certificate. Please have a look at the example certificates for different types of assets. And then using a bond contract.xml, for example, let's create a bond certificate. And you do black market, new dash asset, and then the...
So black market, new dash asset.
Mm-hmm. And then the contract XML file. Okay. Mm. Now, this issues an asset in the system. Now, let's go ahead. I'm going to pull up this... let's take a look at this bond contract here. So
you can actually go and have a look at ones that have already been signed. Have you got a browser open?
Yeah.
So go to dev.glbse.com/cgi-bin/list.
Oh yeah, you're doing this for listeners too. Sorry.
Yeah.
Can you paste this to me?
One second. Okay. Got that?
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. Now, while we're pulling this up here, what's nice about this is how it's related to what fellow traveler was talking about with these Ricardian contracts and listing specifically what the asset or, you know, what the contract specifies, just like a real contract. This is not just a... Well, which one of these would you like to look up here? I'm looking at all these asset IDs. I see the ticker symbol and the quantity issued for each one.
Have a look at the one at the bottom.
Awesome.
The awesome one, yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, we have in here this is the raw XML. Yeah, this is the raw XML I'm looking at. Okay. So we have these elements here, contract signature, server public key, the signer public key, and then the contract. And with that, you have, let's say in this one, it says the type is a share. And then you have the next set of fields are the issuer information. And with that, you have the contact, their email, their PGP key. Then you go down to the officers. You have the CEO, their email, and if they have a public key, secretary, treasurer. That's the end of the officers. You go down to the name. You have the organization. In this case is Bitcoin Global. The address, website, bitcoin-global.com. And then you go down to terms. And this is, I'll just read a few sentences here because this is pretty interesting. The holder of this certificate from here on, known as a shareholder, is a holder of one share of the organization named elsewhere in this contract. That is, the owners of these shares are the owners of the organization, such that all assets held and profits earned by the organization are the property of the shareholders. Each share entitles the holder to one vote in motions put forward by the organization. And it continues down. Later on, it talks about the decision to wind up the organization and their for liquidate its assets requires the approval of at least 51% shares. So, it goes through here of what the terms of this particular asset. Now, one of the things that I noticed in the assets that were, there's a difference here. Well, I didn't notice this. Fellow traveler noticed it and brought it up with me in a conversation yesterday. Was in your example contract format here, your XML contract, is inside of, you have in the sample contract, it starts off with the contract element and it has the PGP key block included in it and all the contract terms and the like. And then in your instructions, it says to issue this, you run black market, new asset, and then the bond contract XML file. Now, in his system, you mentioned about the self-certifying certificate. The XML needs to be PGP signed with the key that's included inside of the XML contract.
Yeah, I know. Okay. I kind of felt that was I know, just a little bit untidy for me. I don't like having anything actually outside the XML. So I figure that the ID of the contract is the hash of the entire XML document. So, you know, if anything, if the public key of either of the users, which is outside, or the signature, which is outside, is changed, then the verification of the document would fail because it wouldn't hash to the document's ID.
Okay.
And then the contract itself, which is inside, that's the bit that's signed.
Right.
And that's done automatically on the client.
Okay. Well, here's how this is how I'm seeing this take place in my head, and maybe I'm missing something here, is the contract is signed, but it's signed by the user of this, of the GLBSSE, correct?
Yes, it's signed by their key, not necessarily like your own GPG key.
Yeah.
It's signed by their public key on the system.
Okay, now here's the problem that I see, is that if you have a contract that's being thrown into the system with a PGP public key block inside of it, and it's not signed by that key pair of that matches that of the private key that matches this public key block, then somebody would be able to issue this contract with somebody else's public key. Does that make sense? Like I could go in here and issue a bond.
Basically, you're pretending to be someone else.
Yeah, right. Right. But if I sign it, then there's no way that that could have been that someone else could have included my PGP block inside of their contract. So it seems like that's the only way.
This is to do with signing. I'm using. What was I using? I'm using OpenSSL. I'm not using GPG to sign. So these documents are signed with OpenSSL. I kind of found GPG a bit difficult to work with. Yes, there is that problem at the moment.
Okay. Well, there's one suggestion
Go ahead.
Is you said you didn't want to sign the contract from the outside, but it's just that you could, like, we're in the public key block there. You could sign that public key, the actual key, public key block. You could sign that public key block with the private key inside of the public key element. But that still would not have all that will certify is that this PGP key, the public key, has been signed by that particular key pair. Whereas if you actually sign the entire contract, then the person who signed it has signed everything of the contract, and you can check in the future that key that is listed inside of there matches what signed the entire contract. So it's just something I wanted to bring up that fellow traveler mentioned. So
yeah, and from what I'm hearing, you're right on that. It's just out of, I wouldn't say laziness, it's just out of priority and getting certain functionality. I mean, we're not, for certain functionality first, and then the actual signing of the contracts, that part is actually kind of flexible because we can do that on the client.
Mm-hmm. Well, the server, if I, like in this example, if I was going to edit this bond contract XML file and issue my own bond, okay, what I would do is edit, copy the bond contract XML example file over to another file of my company.xml, agoristradio.xml, and then I would edit it exactly as it is, save it exactly as it is, and then clear sign it externally with the PGP using the same key that I had included in it. And then I would run the black market issue asset and then do that on the ClearSigned XML file. But I'm just, throwing out a process here that would,
We'll probably do that. I mean, my experience with Ruby is integrating with anything outside OpenSSL and even using OpenSSL isn't the most pleasant experience in the world. That's just to do with Ruby and... But from what I know, Python Python has much better libraries for this sort of thing, so we might go that route with the client before we actually release. But the whole point is to make the thing as transparent and easy to use as possible.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, well, that was all good. And then you have other commands down here: pay, new vote, vote motions, and the like on those. This is all
not implemented yet. I'm working on the voting functionality right now. Next after that is the dividends, and then we'll go to kind of like a fourth kind of release for testing. This is our third testing release, so.
Okay, I had a little thing here I wanted to bring up. Under the depositing withdrawing, when you say deposit and you throw back a payment location that is custom to this, it's a custom location for them to pay to per transaction. And then when someone does a withdrawal, they can throw in the location of where they want it paid. I'm not sure if you listened to the Loom API show, but in that one, this is very, very similar to how the Loom API would work. So the way that your system is set up, I can see it being very, very little code changes that would need to be made or added to support, let's say, people. Well, like there's another very solid currency out there right now. It's not Bitcoin. It's a privately issued currency. It's the GSF, I'm not sure who it's issued by with Ray servers and what they're doing. But it's a gold-backed currency. The names of the units are called globals, and they're, I guess a global is like a gram, and one-tenth of a global is a tenth of a gram of gold. Now, these guys are looking at a future of having the same exact things that you're offering on your features list for those particular assets, okay? But people in those assets, a lot of times, people who have a lot of gold, they're not necessarily just going to go to an exchanger and then exchange that over for Bitcoin and then throwing it on the Bitcoin market. It seems like it could be possible to do a, let's say, black market deposit and then a special asset ID that is in the system. Maybe not necessarily the same thing. I guess it would be called a currency ID, and that would specify a Loom location for them to pay to. They would go over to log into loom.cc, take their globals, and then transfer it to that location. And then when the money showed up, it would be inside their balance. And then there could be an entire market going based on this Loom currency. It could be any Loom currency, actually. But in this specific case, one rock-solid currency in Loom is the GSF globals. And I don't see that there would be very much code changes to your back-end system at all because, I mean, when you're manipulating stuff, Bitcoin being your base currency that things are settled with, it would just be a different code of currency that would happen. And
yeah, globals or Linden dollars or whatever the case may be.
Right, yeah. I mean, I know that someone could issue their currency as an asset and that be traded, but then it's still being settled in the Bitcoin, whereas when you have some other solid currencies, and, that's all, of course, it's all objective, to a lot of people on what they feel is solid and like. But there is going to be a lot of market activity out there and people that are dying to use this type of a system and issue it. And it could be a big boon to your entire system to support, I think, like to be able to support alternate markets that run with Loom-based assets. So it's just something
I think you're completely right in this. And actually, I think, my own opinion, that in the future, in the next year to year and a half, we're going to see a lot of these systems, like I'm just going to do the basic functionality of my system once that's up and running and I'm happy with it and release it, I'll be, you know, improving it and so on, and then integrating other systems. And I can see these other systems like, you know, the Bitcoin, the global Bitcoin stock market and Loom, not merging, but all starting to connect to each other and then integrate with each other. And we're going to see a lot more, a huge amount of liquidity and flexibility between the systems. And this is going to be, the way it'll work will be so complex you couldn't actually picture it. But, you know, you only need to add a certain level of kind of recursive functionality that will allow that to happen. And then we will have an amazingly dynamic market.
Yeah, it's kind of mind-blowing to think of how close we are to so many things. I mean, some people just coming into this and not really understanding the dynamics and the importance and the depth of what's going on right now, they'll just look at this and say, oh, yeah, well, you got a stock exchange. So what? You know?
Yeah. You know, and then throw in open transactions in there as well. And, you know,
Right. Yeah, I didn't even think of that for going into the example right now. I wanted to bring up the Loom example first, just because the way that your system works,
it seemed to fit so closely.
Yeah, because you have a sub account, kind of like a house account inside the Bitcoin system, okay, and that's what you're doing with your payment IDs, and that'd be the same way if you were going to allow Loom, then you know, you would have your house account on loom.cc or a house account on Pork Loom or any of these other looms that may be popping up that you may support. And then you just issue your new Loom locations. It's just all the same. And of course, if you did the same thing for inside of with open transactions, there's, you know, you can tell them to give you cash, you know, or to send a voucher, you know, to a certain ID. And Open Transactions has these, the money changer system, they're talking about adding P2P functionality in that. So, you know, you could say inside of your particular client that someone may do that has P2P capability that is using something like what VoucherSafe is using, the XMPP protocol. You know, you could say, you know, pay this to this particular Jabber ID. And they, you know, click that in their client, and then bam, it's in their balance. Yeah, I think that, I mean, if you think of just integrating a couple of these systems, besides Bitcoin, into your market system, as a settling currency inside of it, wow. My mind starts to just wow, you know. And then if
system then becomes a very juicy target, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. That's a different, as a fellow traveler says, that's a different problem.
Actually, the next step after we have the market running is to move it into cypherspace. So we're going to run it from Tor, and we're going to have, I'm actually working with someone so that they have their own system to allow other systems to run behind their system. They're the kind of Tor connection, and then they set up, I suppose you could say, a proxy to their normal machine. So each machine doesn't need to run Tor.
Right.
It just goes through this one kind of central server and makes it really easy to deploy on Tor. And then we'll also have kind of regular HTTP proxies. So that will prevent the it should make it more difficult to find the location of the exchange itself.
Yeah. It's sort of a Red Queen thing here. I mean, this is what did they call it? The race, the nuclear arms race type of a thing. That's the type of thing that we're looking at here. But a couple of suggestions here is, one, if your transport is completely reliant on a communication if the transport is, let's say, SSL or TLS based. And you are requiring...
Actually, it's not. It's clear text currently.
What part is clear text? What do you
mean? So when you send in an order from the client, it's signed. It's not encrypted. So the order is signed. It's not encrypted.
Okay. So anyone like eavesdropping
can view it.
can see what's going on in the market. Okay. And that's just because you're in testing right now, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It gets rid of complexity for testing.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that. Now, here's a suggestion is if you go ahead and throw a transport encryption on this, that's all fine and dandy. But let's say that you do SSL or TLS on this, then you're going to have problems on the I2P network as opposed to because I2P doesn't use the SSL. It does all the encrypted connection.
It does the encryption itself.
Right. So one suggestion would be is that if you go with a not packet based, but if you go with message based encryption, then you open this up to something. Let's see, like an OTR type encryption that's happening between the clients and the server, because what happens then is you are not tied down to having an SSL connection happening from passing all the way through, and you could use something like Jabber or XMPP servers to. Think of the possibility of a client running an XMPP client. I'm not talking about
the processes that sends orders to the server.
Yeah, I'm talking about actually let's say the black market client itself communicated through an OTR communication over XMPP to the backend server. It would then be client and then the XMPP server of the client, and then it would bounce over to whatever federated server that the black market backend server was located with, and then it would that still would be a server, and then it would go to the actual client itself. Now, there are people talking about creating this sort of mixmaster system for XMPP so that messages can be bounced around multiple XMPP servers on the net, because you get the ability to do so much stuff outside of so much stuff that's a very P2P fashion, where normally you have to have firewalls open and all this. And then that same thing translates over into any other overlay network that you would use, like I2P or Tor or all of those systems, completely transparent. So I don't know, it's just some ideas that I'm just suggesting that to look into possible message based encryption. Also, there's the problem right now with all of the SSL. I guess it's easier to put it in here with people doing man in the middle and trusting certificate authorities and all that. But when you go with the message based level, then you actually are encrypting something.
It's getting around that, yeah.
You know, it's going specifically to a specific user and back. Mm. So there is no.
We can distribute the server's public keys with the client.
Right. So anyway, just some little thoughts there, because I know that these systems are going to have to go deep. Because there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of criminals trying to attack these systems because they don't like them and everything.
Plus, you think it'd be criminals?
Yeah.
I'm more worried about governments.
Well, that's who I was referring to. Criminal activity. People that are looking to pillage and steal and rob and use their little letters of marquee to go out and,
make it official.
Yeah, make it official and seize the goods, like what they're doing right now with the gambling companies and the like, and gaining millions of dollars. So it's, these guys are on a lot of thugs out there on the hunt. So anyway, let's continue with some of the tech stuff. I have some questions. The back-end server, you're using Ruby. Can you tell us at all a little bit about what kind of particular gems that you're using? What kind of, are you using Sinatra or any other Rails?
Okay, well, I'm trying to keep the back end as lean and clean as possible. you know, Rails is pretty good, but it's too much for this, especially because it's running really as a web service more than anything else.
Right.
So I'm using Sinatra as the HTTP server.
Okay.
Right now, with testing, we're using Thin. And we're not using SQL. We're using Datamapper as the object relational mapper. So that'll at the moment, you know, again for testing, we're just running this on a little SQLite file.
Okay.
Because it's just easier. You know, I don't want to spend time setting up a server just for testing with MySQL or PostgreSQL. So, and then when we're going to deploy, we'll spend time hardening the DBMS, and then we won't need to change any of our code because it'll already be in using Datamapper, which is kind of DBMS neutral.
Right, right. Great. Just out of curiosity, go ahead.
Yeah, and just a few kind of JSON, the JSON gem, and a couple of HTTP libraries and so on.
Just out of curiosity, I like to ask this sometimes, is what kind of like editor and I guess you're using Git, but I like to hear what people use for their IDE or editor and their operating system for developing their projects.
Okay, so I have two machines I work on. I have a desktop and a laptop. Laptop is just a little EE PC. It's going to be dying on me soon. Already I have to use a separate screen for it and a separate keyboard and a separate mouse. Plug them in for USB and whatnot. So on the laptop, I use Emacs on Windows. And then on my desktop, for some obscure reason, Emacs just won't run. The window will start up and then it'll die on me, and I haven't found out why. So I'm kind of stuck with Notepad++ on my desktop.
Right.
In terms of the source control, we're using Git for the client, and for the server, I'm using Fossil.
Okay.
Just because we started off with the server first, and we're trying to make managing the project as easy as possible, because we don't want to have the server out on server code out on Gutorius or GitHub, because like we don't have any dollars. The only capital we have is Bitcoin, and Gutorius and GitHub don't accept Bitcoin, so we can't get any private accounts. So we have our development server. Yeah, everything is in Bitcoin. Everything we do is Bitcoin. We bought our domains in Bitcoin. We're paying for our servers in Bitcoin. We're paying developers in Bitcoin. My VPN, because I'm in China, I'm in mainland China, my VPN is done with Bitcoin. And really, Bitcoin is my window to the world outside where I am.
Yeah, this is great.
It'd be pretty bleak without it, because being based in China, I don't have any credit cards. I can't do business in the US or the EU or anywhere. So.
Yeah.
Bitcoin is really the only thing I have. So it's my only means of getting anything done that requires money. So we've been using Bitcoin to pay for all this. So we had to set up our own project management to an extent. And I didn't want to spend a lot of time doing that. So Fossil is just it's the guy who does SQLite. He made this little kind of project management called Fossil. It's just one executable, and it includes everything you need. It's got the source control management, it's got a bug DB, and a little wiki, and kind of blogging platform and whatever. And you can just run that, the Fossil command, from a CGI script, and it will handle everything. And it worked. It is very easy to use and very easy to set up. And I don't think Git could have been set up for multiple users as easily.
Oh,
now, of course, the client, because it's open source, we don't have that problem. We just use Gutorius.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's interesting. That was nice. I didn't know that the Fossil had those other little additional features like bug tracking and other stuff.
Oh, it's got a ton of functionality thrown in, and it's way easy to use. And the cool thing is, when you synchronize with Fossil, it'll synchronize all the bugs and everything. So my network connection is very unreliable. And there are times when I won't be able to get online for days. And it's good to be able to have all that information on my local machine so I can check the bugs and check any of the wiki pages I've made to when I can't get online. So
that's interesting.
It helps a lot.
Yeah, I can see that. That's nice. Can you tell us a little bit about the Python development?
So the Python development, we started originally trying to do a kind of Ruby command line client, and that was a bit of a false start. The libraries for Ruby for any kind of encryption, we're stuck with OpenSSL, and it's not great. Uh-huh. And certainly not great on Windows, because these things have to be able to run on Windows. I want people to be able to just go ahead and install it easily and run it.
Right.
And I came across a guy who was interested in working with me on this. Excellent developer, a guy called Genjix. He gave a presentation about Bitcoin to some financial types in Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago. My Bitcoin company paid for him to go. We gave him like 500 Bitcoin to pay for his ticket and everything. Uh-huh. So he's an excellent developer, and he started off the client development and doing it in Python. He decided to go with M2 Crypto as the crypto library.
Okay.
And a couple of other library packages there.
Yeah, that was one of the Python libs I had to install.
Install, crypto. Yeah.
Yeah. Great. How many people are working on this right now? I mean, actively developing.
Actively developing, there's two. Me, right now, there's two. Very soon, there's going to be three. We had a guy who's working on a graphical user interface. What was he using? Not Python TK. Python. There's Python QT, Python TK, and what's the other? WX.
Oh, yeah.
WX Python. So I sent him some PDFs with a sketch of what I'd like the graphical interface to be like, and he sent me back some WX Python files to... Just for the interface. There's no functionality tied into it.
Right.
And when I get some more time, I'm going to get him, and we've got the command line done, I'm going to get him to start tying that functionality to the command line from the GUI. So we'll have a nice
just
GUI.
A wrapper.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is going to be for the GUI client you're looking at, also making this a completely cross-platform standalone GUI.
Exactly.
Okay.
So that's three developers, including me. There's Genjix, who's working on the client, and then the other guy who's Kokjo, K-O-K-J-O, who's working on the GUI. Well, he's kind of on a break at the moment. And then we're going to bring in more people on, not so much for the stock market itself, but for our next project, which is kind of like a decentralized package delivery service.
Oh, do you want to tell us anything about that?
Oh, it's way cool.
Well, it just keeps getting better. Yeah, let's go ahead. We've really come up to... Let me check the time here and see how much we have. We've just gone over an hour. And I think that there's a lot of stuff here that we could continue to talk on. But let's go ahead and cover this cool thing. And then we'll close it up. And then hopefully we'll have you back for... some topics related to the project and surrounding what's happening related with the project.
Yeah. So this is one of the many cool things that we're going to work on. I'm going to be selling shares to kind of raise, selling shares on the on our stock market when it's ready to raise more capital for this. So the general idea with it, it's called BitDrop.
Okay.
And it's going to be a delivery network where you can deliver physical packages paying with Bitcoin. And the way it works is someone can go to the website and sign up as a delivery person, and they can put in their location and say how far from where their location is they're willing to go and then how much they want to charge.
Okay.
And the more people sign up, eventually you're going to get, you know, these kind of delivery nodes that are going to be touching each other. And so it'll get to the point where, you know, you'll have one node touching another node touching another node. So you'll be able to reach from the main delivery point or the first point to the final destination going from node to node to node, each one taking a shave of Bitcoin or whatever their charge is. And so that's the basic idea.
Okay.
Throw in a bit of kind of Tor onion routing in there, in that each node will only know the address that he's delivering to of the next node.
And this is and then you could, well, you know, you do something like that too, then any intermediate node in a network could have a, you know how this friend-to-friend networks are working different than the P2P systems? And in the F2F systems, I know like there's this one called RetroShare, which is a, have you heard of RetroShare?
No, I haven't.
It's an interesting project to look into. It's a graphical user interface P2P program. It has forums, built-in messaging, and file transfer and the like. And when you start it up, you have no nodes. You don't connect to anyone. You have to throw in an IP or an address, and there's some type of handshake. And then you're connected with one person. And you just have these friends that you connect to. And then your friends maybe have other friends, but you won't. If you may be able to communicate with them or something, or be able to access their files if they open them up outside of their immediate circle of friends, but you will never have direct communication with them. So
it'd be through your own friends.
Yes, through your own friends. So if you had a system like this, like you're talking about, when you signed up, you could say, "I will only be an intermediate with these couple of people," and then you would eliminate some attacks against a system like this, where you know that I'm only dealing with my friends or my family or the certain associates that I have for you know, doing this.
Exactly.
And I don't have to worry about different layers. I just have to trust, you know.
I think as well, we can throw in a little bit of geocaching in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. This is
once you include this node to node delivery, geocaching, and kind of onion nodes, so that each node only likes knows the delivery location of the person they're supposed to deliver to, which is the next node, and maybe not even the next node. It may be just like a drop-off point that the next node might come and get. It makes it really difficult to follow packages, and it should be a low-cost way of, not a fast way, but certainly a low-cost way, and using Bitcoins, of having any kind of package of reasonable size delivered.
Yeah.
And on top of that, it'll allow people who are like 12, 13, 14 years old, who aren't allowed work, to earn something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, young kids, I know when I was that age, I would have loved to be a runner.
Yeah, right. This is very agoric. I mean, this, and this isn't just, you could look and say, well, okay, this whole system could work here. But once the system is implemented, it can work anywhere in the entire world, in
exactly
places that you couldn't even imagine right now. And you're not having to think about, well, yeah, it could work there, but how am I going to pay the people and all this type of stuff? No, because we're talking about these alternate value transfer systems.
Currencies.
And
this is what Bitcoin enables.
Yeah, right.
You know, and it's the first step. You know, now that we have Bitcoin is taking off, and it's the first step, and it enables so many things. It's going to change everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's time for people who have some old cypherpunk writings that have gotten a little dusty. It's time to get them out and
pick
have
up the
a reread.
Pen.
Yeah, what'd you say?
Or, well, maybe pick up the pen, or maybe start with a keyboard.
Yeah, and kind of like, you know, realize that, you know, because there was a lot of excitement many years ago about a lot of this stuff and a lot of sci-fi writings and a lot of, you know, the cypherpunks mailings, all these things that could be done and that are going to be possible. And, you know, look, this stuff is going to come whether anyone likes it or not. And then it kind of died down. But what's happening right now is that it's in our face. And with the government, you know, seizing people's, like what happened with WikiLeaks, you know, I mean, there was a spike in activity with some of the circles that I was in with watching what was going on with Bitcoin when WikiLeaks gets its money seized in PayPal, and then they get their money seized at the Swiss bank account. And then you just have these people out there looking at this, and then now these domain names are getting seized without due process and the like. And there's all this technology that whereas in the past there was more of like, oh man, you know, let's vote next election and get these guys out of office, and we need to change our system. And now people are just
forget
like,
that.
Yeah, they're just wait a second here.
Forget that. We'll do it ourselves.
Yeah, we just bypass it. We don't need to. Let's stop wasting energy on trying to you know, fight some old system and go and this whole conversation of everything we're talking about right here is so much in that direction, and especially this new the project you just mentioned, it's right along there.
On that project, for your listeners, I am looking for developers, so we haven't decided on whether we're going to use Ruby, Python, PHP, or whatever the case is. But we are looking for developers. Developers will be paid in Bitcoin. Won't be a huge amount, but you get some serious cool credits for working on this.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the idea, I mean, I've heard, not exactly as you all described it, but I've heard many people talk about this just within the past 6 months about the need for a package delivery system. And or network, you know. And
this is really second realm stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And there's, you know, the way you talked about it is one, and then you have these other what you would call like use cases where there's these what you call second realm groups in meat space, and they may be doing their particular economic activity and businesses and the like in their areas, but they may want to do some settlement of actual gold and silver, not just some bits, but maybe there needs to be some on-the-ground settlement of hard assets that have to take place. And this type of
Have you read my article about an anonymous currency exchange?
No, I don't think I have. Is it posted under your name, and where is it located? Go ahead and paste me the URL.
Give us a second, and I'll kind of paste you.
I'll make sure that this is in the.
You can. It's on Bitcoin Weekly.
Well, it sounds like that I've been going crazy for about this. I have this. I mean, today, I don't know if you saw the show that was posted on the last show on Cypherpunk was in praise of Hawala. And
I've listened to that twice already.
had you seen the article before?
About Hawala?
No.
I'd read
his article, J. Orlin Graby's article.
No, I hadn't.
Oh, see, that's great. That's one nice thing about this radio thing is there's a lot of stuff that's out there that I'm hoping to condense and present out there in a particular format and intermixed with all the topics that we're covering to try to paint like this particular picture of ideas and memes that I see flying out there and that I see all these other people like you working on and doing because it's all tying in together. And I have this vision I've talked about some on some of our shows and on several other shows of this massive P2P Hawala system that is, I mean, right now, you know, we're dealing with like these, what, how many exchanges are there around the world that are halfway reliable that we could even possibly know about right now? Maybe 10, I don't know, of, you know, in getting money assets in or out of like these the digital gold currencies and cyber currency
and there's no way to do that anonymously.
No, but if you have these systems where, see, here's the thing: this ties in with your package delivery system. Is that it wouldn't be much to create a network, and there already are networks now on the ground with other types of assets that are massively distributed, where people are willing to sell hard assets for money and cash and to use cash to buy these particular hard assets. And in these networks, they're actually buying and selling hard assets that are contraband, whereas if you're talking about a P2P Hawala network, you're not dealing with contraband. You're just dealing with cash or gold or silver coins. So there's not the risk level, yet the payoff can be a lot higher. So, you know, if I need to get money in, well, I can go to my local dealer and say, hey, here's $50. You know, I don't want a bag of weed. I want 50 Bitcoin. And I give him $50, yeah. And then I get 50 Bitcoin. And then, or he gives me a number that's some type of a voucher or something, a voucher ID from Open Transactions or whatever. And I send that number to a friend. And then he goes over to his local dealer and says, you know, here's, I just came to pick up this money. He walks in and then he picks up the money and the guy takes, you know, instead of giving him 50 grams of gold, he gives him, 49.5 grams and then, you know, walks away. So, and then any individual who's doing that in and out, he doesn't have to have this massive stash. He could have 10 gold coins and in exchange and out exchange 100 transactions with those 10 gold if he had it balanced out between buys and sells. And he could do 100 sales based upon only, he could have one gold coin and if his transactions were level, he could sell that all day long, 100 in, 100, you know, sell it, buy it, sell it, buy it, sell it, buy it. He could do 100 transactions.
This is what's happening on the Bitcoin exchange markets already, you know. People go in with a few Bitcoin, and they just buy and sell all day. And you change Bitcoin for gold or whatever the asset may be, it works the same.
Yeah, well, if this stuff starts to happen like this on a massively scale where everyone realizes that they can be an exchanger for and they don't have to be the exchanger for their city. They can be the exchanger for all of
their block.
For their block, for their friends, for all their family.
Classroom. Yeah.
For just their little F2F network. That's it. That's all they have to be. And then with there being an incentive of profit on this, this is insane. This is really crazy. I mean, without going into all the implications of this, I think most of the listeners, you know this, and I think you do too. Mm-hmm.
So I would like to go ahead with the anonymous exchange, but because I'm not based in the U.S., it does require bank accounts. Like the way is for the exchange itself to remain anonymous, mm-hmm. so that it can have the store. The store of cash, and the government doesn't know who he is or where he is, can't raid him. You can't raid where you don't know. Mm-hmm. But of course, this person requires, you know, has to be really, really trustworthy.
Yeah, well, all this stuff, there's all kinds of levels of trust and problems that have to be solved on that. But I think that if you look at how it's working in the real world right now, you can.
They're solvable problems.
Yeah, they're solvable problems that they have been solved now in many different ways, and we can just use those models of what are these human relationships and how are they working now, and then translate that over. But like you said, one of the things with me, that's why I'm interested in talking about all this stuff. But I mean, there's some in development and systems that people, some of the stuff that you're talking about, you know, running with, you know, someone doing the anonymous or this package delivery, you know, running this stuff, there's a lot of people that are taking a lot of risks. I mean, some people said, hey, aren't you like scared of talking about this stuff? I'm like, no, because I'm just up here talking about it. I'm not actually, you know, involved with
doing it,
running any type of an operation. No, I'm just talking about the technology that's happening, what people are working on, how fascinating it is, and the issues behind it, and then giving suggestions, and maybe there's some code that I may throw or look or, you know, get, you know, do some stuff in GitHub or something with these things. But, you know, I mean, I love programming and hacking and, you know, with writing programs and stuff like that. So it's a fascinating thing to follow. Well, let's see. Well, we still went over, but man, that was an amazing little next project you have going on there. So before we go, anything you want to go over or say before we take off here?
Let me think. So yeah, just about how some of the things work. So if you have shares or if you're issuing shares, mm-hmm. when the system is running, so when dividends and everything are running, is it's all based on reputation. So if you're an issuer of shares and you have no reputation, I wouldn't recommend anyone to go and buy those shares or buy bonds from you or buy or lend you any money. So the way loans and bonds work, you put let's say you want to make a borrow 1,000 Bitcoin. So you make the contract and you say, I will pay back 1.1 Bitcoin for each, share of this bond, and you issue 1,000 of this bond. And you sell them at a price of 1 Bitcoin each. So the person who buys that bond is buying, they're hoping you will pay back 1.1 in the future, and you will be able to, with the pay command on black market, you will be able to pay whoever owns those assets whatever particular amount you promise to pay.
Right
now, that's the it's not an automated contract, but we will be that's something for the future. And it's the same with a futures contract. Instead of paying money, you're paying a good, a physical good, whether it's coffee or lemons or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, no, this is great because one of the things that is happening right now too is you can see the liquidity. There's a lot of Bitcoins out there that are being held, but the liquidity of it in the exchanges is quite low because a lot of people, they're speculating on it, and they're speculating on it, or there's nothing out there that they want to purchase. They're not interested in just selling it for US dollars and the like. But this is allowing them to possibly look into taking that money.
Investing.
Throwing it, towards something that, we're not talking, of course, there's going to be a lot of gambling. We're not talking about gambling. Let's say somebody's out there and they have a thought like you, 1,000 Bitcoins that they generated, 8 months ago that it's been sitting around. They don't want to sell it, but they think, I could take this and throw it toward this project for the stock exchange. I can invest in that.
And then it's not like you get nothing from it. You get shares in that project.
Right.
And as long as those people who are doing it are trustworthy, it could be, it should be worth more than what you put in.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you have this cool thing that's been created from it.
Uh-huh. Exactly. Yeah. And in a lot of these projects that are actually popping up, it's not just, it's something cool. It's something that is, you're throwing money into the system that's actually building itself, if it's a Bitcoin related or some of these financial crypto type,
and you're going. If it works, you're going to be rewarded for it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you go from there. And I can see the same thing happening with a lot of people in the Loom system who have rock solid gold assets that would be willing to go ahead and do this same type of a thing. Throw it up toward a project that they really believe in, and then bring it back and do this within. What you're having done here. Nefario, thank you very much first for all of the work that you've done on your project and the stuff that you're putting out. Oh, hey, one last note. I saw on your webpage this Twitter thing happening over here, and I see the buys and the sells like scrolling by and the Twitter thing. And it was just kind of funny that Twitter being used sort of like a kind of like a ticker.
Well, I was thinking I don't want to host that information myself.
Uh-huh.
Because there's going to be a lot of it. Where's the best place to put it?
Yeah.
And I thought Twitter is the best place.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's just the ticker system.
if you want to write a bot or something, I'm going to be outputting it to IRC as well in the same way MT Gox does.
Oh, great.
But for a historical record, for people who don't have an IRC client, they can always go to the Twitter feed and have a look at that and see where the market's moving.
Yeah, that's great. That's a funny little thing I just remembered. Also, thank you very much for the work in your project. Thank you very much for coming on here. I know there's a whole slew of people out there that are listening to Cypherpunked and love this stuff, and this is another five-star show to hear about the stuff that you're doing and your team and this company and where you're going with it. So thanks again for coming on, and I hope to have you back again.
It's funny as well, like the company doesn't really exist. It's not legally enforceable, but you know, everybody who's involved, me, we have a treasurer who's got a great reputation. He's on the Bitcoin forums. We have our secretary, our treasurer, and our investors, and you know, everything we're doing, there's no one to kind of make us to enforce our contract, our promise to each other, but it's all based on our reputation. If I decide to kind of try and run off with the money, and I put in half of all my Bitcoins into this project as well. If I run off with the money, or if our treasurer, who actually has the Bitcoins, runs off with the money, you know, my reputation is trashed, or his reputation is trashed. Yeah. And it's worth way, our reputations are worth more than what we could get from any one theft.
Yeah. Well, you know, if someone really, really, really wants to have some nanny to watch over everything and all this, then they can just go take their money and go down to their local Merrill Lynch branch, and they can put it in there, and Merrill Lynch can invest it into stocks and bonds and home loan mortgages all bundled together. They can do all that stuff and have all the regulars standing right on top, making sure that no one runs off with their money, and be nice and secure with, you know, their little nest egg that's going to be there, because no one's going to run off with it. And then, you know, look at what's happened right now. So, you know, if you want to go with those systems, go ahead. If you want to have take your money and make decisions with what you want to do with it and do your due diligence, and you want to gamble it, okay, you can go gamble it on the slot machine somewhere, or you can look at these projects and businesses and look at investing your money and growing in this big agora.
New economy.
Yeah, exactly.
This new economy.
Exactly. So, wow.
Oh, so one thing I wanted to say, I forgot to tell you about MetaTrading.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Touch on that. Yes, this is great.
Okay, so the idea with MetaTrading is, so let's say you're someone who has a reputation, people trust you, you go and you buy, you know, several shares or whatever in a real company.
Yeah.
And you can then go and issue shares, Meta shares, on this stock market.
Right.
And then those Meta shares can be traded. And then, of course, when you...
Oh, man.
When you get actual dividends payments, you can use that to buy Bitcoin and then pay to the owners of these MetaShares. So it allows someone to buy shares for you in proxy, and of course you can MetaTrade.
The whole MetaTrading thing, it's funny. Did you ever read up on Gerilyn Graby's DMT system? I'll put the link. You can find his old webpage at Orlin Graby, ORLINGRABBE. .com. He passed away a few years ago, but he had this digital monetary trust. In it was a sort of an anonymous secure banking system, but he also had what was called the LESI, and that was the Laissez-Faire Electronic Stock Exchange. It's very similar to what you're working on right now, but it was different in many ways. It's for another discussion, but they also were working on this meta trading, and we're actually talking with people who were real traders and doing this stuff so that they could create this sort of shadow alternate trading system, so people could just, anyone could get in there, jump in and jump out and do all their stuff and not be, you know, tied in to the old system, but still be, you know, using the old system. The meta trading, that's quite something else.
Well, that's the flexibility. That's the flexibility given by Ricardian contracts. And I know, like, we've talked about some of the, you know, bonds, stocks, MetaTrading, and so on. But these things are going to be so flexible. People are going to use them for things we can't even imagine.
Yeah, right.
You know, I don't know about you, but several years ago, I used to play around on the Hollywood Stock Exchange, HSX. Uh-huh. Which is basically a MetaTrading site for
prediction
for movie stars and movies, and it was fairly accurate. I wasn't very good at it, but you know, it's kind of the same sort of thing.
Yeah, again,
it's been good.
Yeah, thank you very much, Nefaro, and I'll try to post up most of the URLs that we have here in the chat on the show notes, and people can find the website and look into this more. Oh, one last thing. People who want to get involved with this project, is it best just for them to go to your main website and find a contact form, or is there a forum or something? Where do your developers
hang out? A lot of the talk happens on the Bitcoin forum. So right now we're testing. So there's a thread. I'll send you that link in a minute or two.
Okay.
And you can put that up. So that's for the third stage of testing that we've been doing. To contact me personally, my email is on the Global Bitcoin Stock Exchange. You can also get my contact details, I think, from Twitter. A few people have done that.
Okay.
I think. So I don't really care who has my email. You know.
Okay. Do you guys have an IRC channel, or are you looking at possibly?
We have, but it's private.
Okay.
So nothing much on the IRC channel yet, because there's no one who's around full time, and I'm offline for days at a time when my connection goes down.
Yeah.
It's really bad. Like, okay. I go for days without power.
Wow. Something else. Okay. Well, we're closing up here.
Okay.
Thanks
again.
It's
been good talking to you.
Yeah, you too, man. This has been fantastic. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. We're going to close out here with a song by The Crystal Method, She's My Pusher. And we'll be back for the rest of the week with more great topics and guests. We'll be right back.
dodge this.
This is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. AgoristRadio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
Broadcasting from deep within the Second Realm, you are listening to AgoristRadio.com.